by far and away, the issue facing the continent right now is we are in the early stages of what I can't describe as anything other than a resource adequacy crisis.
Welcome to The Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 131, episode 131 of The Flux Capacitor. I've been chatting with the industry's business leaders, thought leaders, new market players, and stakeholders. I've billed this as an opportunity for you, the listener, to get a sense of the conversations that are taking place in the sector. In hallways over coffee, outside of parliamentary committees, in airport lounges, and at industry events. This podcast was recorded immediately following just such an event at the North American Electric Reliability Corporation's Electric Sector and Data Center Leadership Roundtable. My guest on the podcast today is
Jim Robb from NERC.
Jim, the NERC CEO, joined me for a quick end-of-the-year roundup on reliability issues. Jim notes that the upcoming long-term reliability report will highlight five regions at high risk of reliability issues, with nine more at moderate risk. Our conversation covers the impact of data centers, extreme weather, and grid transformation on reliability. Jim emphasizes the need for more generation, better resource diversity, and improved fuel supply. We also discuss the role of NERC in educating stakeholders and the importance of timely standards development. We close our conversation with Jim's recommendation for an addition to the Flux Capacitor Book Club. Here is my conversation with Jim Robb, recorded in Washington the week before Christmas in 2025. Jim, welcome back to the podcast. You're now, I think, the first person who is a three-timer on the podcast.
Well, I'm honored to play that role for you, Francis.
But what that says to me is reliability is getting increasingly important.
Yeah.
Right. And critical. And so I'm glad I was able to come down and do this and have this conversation face to face as opposed to over Zoom, because we're here talking about data centers and large loads. It was certainly an interesting conversation, but I was thinking of it in the context of, my goodness, how things have changed. This time last year, you and I were kind of talking about, we've got an incoming administration that was talking about 25% tariffs on everything, and we didn't know what that was going to look like.
Right.
The good news is it hasn't directly impacted the electricity sector.
That
was a pretty significant year of change. 2 years ago, we were chatting about inverter-based resources and what they might look like. And then on our first podcast, which I think was you were podcast like number three.
I think that's right.
Which was 6 years ago. And that really was kind of a bit of a primer. So if somebody's been listening since the beginning, they know who NERC is. They know what NERC's all about. They know that we were talking about inverter-based resources 2 years ago. So what's the big topic today? I mean, not just, today, this afternoon, but like, what are you principally focused on, and what's really burning as a burning issue for you right now?
Well, I think by far and away the issue facing the continent right now is we are in the early stages of what I can't describe as anything other than a resource adequacy crisis.
Okay.
Now, there are lots of subcomponents to that. Data centers and load growth is one. Extreme weather is one.
Yep.
Grid transformation is another. But at the end of the day, right, this is the first time that I can recall in my almost 40 years of working in the industry where we are seeing plans from the utilities in aggregate that don't add up.
Right.
From a reliability perspective.
Right.
And from a reliability perspective, I mean here a resource adequacy perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be publishing in January our updated long-term reliability assessment.
Okay.
And it's going to show five areas of the country at high risk.
At high risk?
At high risk.
Not the yellow, but the...
But the red,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
And to remind everybody, red means that they don't meet the reliability criteria of 1 in 10.
Right.
Under normal circumstances. We're going to show another 9 areas of the country in yellow.
Right.
Which means that they don't meet it under extreme circumstances.
Right.
And by the way, just yesterday, the results of the PJM capacity auction were published. And, you know, by PJM's own calculations, right, they don't meet the 1 in 10 criteria.
So their capacity auction brought in things that are not going to support reliability.
They didn't bring in enough. Stuff to support reliability.
Right.
Right, so that's the challenge we have.
Okay.
And it's a challenge north of the border, south of the border, it's everywhere. We have to figure out how to get, if we want to meet the load growth that most utilities are seeing across the continent, and most of that load growth would fall in this category of strategic national security, you know, global leadership. It's important for our continent to be ahead.
Right.
We're going to need to figure out how to get new resources built and interconnected onto the grid very, very quickly.
Okay.
And all the supporting infrastructure to allow them to operate.
Right.
And that's no small task for this sector.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the new long-term reliability assessment, because the one that came out last year was concerning enough, given that there was a number of regions that were at elevated risk, and some of them were in Canada. So things have not gotten better. Things have gotten worse.
They've continued to degrade. I think the reality is setting in, particularly with the U.S. administration, right, who has very single-mindedly focused on how to keep resources on the grid that can still operate,
yeah,
and to address the issues around bringing new resources on. It just doesn't happen fast.
Right.
And while we can maybe change policies and stuff like that, we still have this nasty issue of supply chain, right?
Okay.
We've got to be able to actually get the turbines. You've got to get the relays. You've got to get the conductor,
yeah,
to be able to build all this stuff. And then you need to get sited and permitted.
Okay, and so it's supply chain, it's siting and permitting. Is it also the mix? Is it that when these procurements are happening, we're getting more inverter-based resources and not enough base load?
So,
or is that really not it? And it's just a question.
No, it's that part too.
Eh?
Because the things that can come on the grid
quickly,
the quickest, are going to tend to be solar,
yeah,
and batteries.
Right.
And solar and batteries play a very, very important role in the grid.
Yep.
But they can't do everything.
Yeah.
We need the grid to do. Right.
Yeah.
And so we need to have a certain amount. I think the term that people are using or gravitating towards now, rather than dispatchability, is we need clean firm or firm resources,
yep,
to be able to balance all of the variability associated with wind and solar. We need to have resources that provide the reliability services.
Mm-hmm.
So the frequency and frequency management, voltage and voltage management, dispatchability to deal with variability,
mm-hmm,
and uncertainty in load forecasts. And we need fuel certainty.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that has really changed since you and I did our first podcast,
mm-hmm,
6-7 years ago, however long ago it was,
yep,
is at that point in time, we still didn't have the concerns over fuel.
Yeah.
That we do today.
So this is like in the Northeast, natural gas pipeline is constrained and it's not going to be enough.
So natural gas, thank you for the prompt. Natural gas has been one of the themes I've been pushing on.
Yeah.
It's absolutely one of the most essential fuels for reliability right now.
Right.
In the past, right, when we had winter, you know, bad cold events in the winter, like the 2014 polar vortex and so forth, we probably had similar issues with gas that we're seeing today, but we had lots of other stuff.
Okay.
So that if the gas couldn't operate, the coal plants could turn up, right? The nuclear plants were there, right? So we didn't have the same sort of load loss that we've seen in the more recent winter storms. But now as we've lost coal, as we've lost some of those other resources in the resource mix, gas is sort of the last man standing.
Right.
And we know from Uri, we know from Elliot, that when winter storms, Elliot and Uri,
yep,
that when it gets abnormally cold, right, the gas system could have issues.
Right.
And of course, their first priority is always to serve the local distribution companies to keep the pilot lights lit.
Right.
Yeah, that's a massive public safety issue to ensure that, that the LDCs are taken care of. But now they have inherited this responsibility for keeping the lights on as well.
Yeah.
And that's a real stress to the gas system to be able to meet both masters, because both are very, very important for society.
All right. So what's the fix? I get two questions. What's the fix? And what role does NERC have in this fix?
So the biggest fix to everything is more stuff.
Okay.
More stuff, right? Because one of the things is this is what our reliability assessments are showing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Reserve margins are thinning.
Yeah.
There aren't as many options. So when things go wrong, you don't have all of the backup alternatives that you might otherwise have.
Yeah.
So we need more generation. We need to keep our eye on diversity, right? That's one of the other things, is that we generally are losing diversity over time. And diversity is always reliability's friend. So we need to keep our eye on resource diversity. We need to keep our eye on the amount of generation we have, the characteristics of the generation we have, and increasingly we got to be paying attention to fuel supply. All of these things get solved with more stuff. In the meantime, because more stuff isn't going to come quickly, right, we really have to rely on good information sharing, situation awareness, coordination across the electric and gas sectors and between electric operating areas, so that when one area gets in trouble, they have a broader set of resources they can draw from, and that those resources are prepared to come in and help to the extent that they can.
Right, right. Now, when I ask the question, what's NERC's role in this? And what can NERC do? Because it sounds like a lot of these are going to require like legislative action and changes to how we regulate, right?
And that's not going to happen quickly.
No, none of that happens quickly.
If it happens at all.
And also, you're not a lobbyist, right?
No, absolutely.
And so, like, how does NERC make sure that the stakeholders that are able to push for the kind of changes that are going to be required are actually pushing for the changes? Is it through education? Is it through?
Mostly bully pulpit issues for us, because we don't have authorities in many of these areas, but we do have a massive one of the large utility CEOs has told me, you know, I have an obligation to serve. Jim, you have an obligation to speak.
Yeah.
Right. And so we take that obligation to educate very, very seriously. One of the great things about NERC is we're a nonpartisan organization. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say bipartisan. We're nonpartisan.
Yeah.
Right? We are focused on the physics of the system and how different components of the system can come together to operate reliably or create challenges. And you've heard me say this before. I sometimes think of NERC as the trade association for physics, because they don't have one, and they desperately need one. And politicians, what I've discovered, and this is true in Canada, it's true in the U.S., you know, when we talk, we have a special voice relative to other advocates, if you will. Because we don't have a financial interest in the outcome. We don't have a commercial interest in the outcome. We don't have a business interest in the outcome. We are purely mission-driven. And our job is to inform. And I never want to give policy advice, but I like to give policy support. Right. Here's the information. Here's the data. Here's what the facts are saying. Now, you can go do what you want to do with that, because, you know, you have your own constituencies, your own priorities, and your own context. But physics tends to be pretty universal.
Right.
I think math is number one, then physics, then maybe chemistry. Right. So we're probably the second most pure form of science there is. And we need to make sure people understand the consequences of different choices that they make.
Right.
The choices are always theirs, but we can help help them make better decisions.
So chemistry is third? Is
that chemistry is third, and I think biology is fourth.
Didn't you study chemical engineering?
Yeah, so I'm in
that's
third kinda, place.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, physics and chemistry.
No,
yeah,
we took physical chemistry, and we all rose to a different level of intellectual capability when we walked into that class.
All right, let's because I know time is tight. You've got to hop on an Amtrak soon. 2 years ago, we were talking about inverter-based resources, solar, wind, batteries increasingly, yep. and how we were going to integrate them. Today, we're talking about large loads. We're talking yep. about data centers. If you and I circle back 5 years from now, what would we be talking about 5 years from now?
Gosh, who knows? The pace of change that we've seen has been so unforeseeable. I mean, 3 years ago, nobody talked about data centers. Even two nope. years ago, we were just starting to talk about data centers.
Yeah, we were talking about Bitcoin mining, and that was it.
Like, yeah. And even then, people said, oh, you're nuts. It's never yeah. going to turn into anything, and now here we are. You know, what I hope we're talking about in 5 years is how much we learned from the process of getting inverters linked onto the system that helped us get the data centers onto the system okay. quickly and reliably, right? That we are a learning, NERC is a learning organization, that our ecosystem is learning, and that we're learning how to bring new and disparate players into the fold to help us do our work. Mm-hmm. Because we always talk about NERC standards. Well, NERC doesn't write the standards, right? We work the process with yeah. industry and the subject matter experts to do that. But it's got to be done timely. It's got to be done well. And it needs to enable things to happen and not slow things down. Mm-hmm. So one of my big hopes is that we'll look back and say, wow, we achieved that. And that the data center community, which is the topic du jour, will look back and say, boy, that was time well spent. Mm-hmm. And we got a lot done. We're working very, very well with the sector. We're not seeing the reliability issues that we're very concerned about. Mm-hmm. And that's attributed to the collaboration between all the parties involved.
So timely, doing it well. It's been seven and a half years, I think you've been in the role. Something like
almost
that.
Almost a little over that.
Yeah.
Eight years in April.
Yeah, that's right. I remember we had a chat just as you moved into the role. As you
Before I moved into the role, you were tracking me down.
You were still at WEC, and it was at a conference in Banff or something. But yeah, right, we had a terrific chat back then. I believe we've made some pretty significant progress in terms of making it more timely and doing it well. What would your report card be in terms of how, and I say we because, you know, there's a lot of my members that are involved in the standard setting and so on, but like collectively, how have we been doing, and how much better are we than we were when you first moved into this role close to 8 years ago?
I think everything is moving with a greater sense of purpose yeah. and urgency.
Right.
Now, whether it's sufficient yet or not is another matter, right? And we're working to streamline many of our processes. You know, we have this big effort underway to reimagine how we do standards development, mm-hmm. again, maintain all the great special sauce about the way we do it, yeah. but to do it in a more timely way. I'm very, very impressed with how the industry has come to the table. I think there is great consensus across, particularly across the leadership mm-hmm. of the industry, on the priorities and the urgency to get things done. I will say that doesn't always translate down into the rank and file that do a lot of the work with us. So True. Sometimes they probably feel that we're cajoling them more than they would like. But I think in general, we've seen a greater can-do sense yeah. in moving things along. There's a great realization that we're dealing with problems that are potentially quite consequential and new.
Yeah.
I think where people get nervous, including us, is that we are having to parallel process things that we might normally do more in sequence. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge for us and the challenge for industry in holding us accountable for our role is that we move things along, but we never get too far ahead of ourselves.
Right. So what we didn't have 7 years ago was that sense of urgency, I don't think, right?
No, that's right, because 7 years ago we were dealing with problems that we largely understood.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, the inverter issues, the data center issues, and the behavior of these loads, and the we just never dealt with a gigawatt-plus load before.
Yeah.
So these are just new problems for us to solve.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to be a learning organization, and I think we are. I think we're doing a very good job of assimilating some of the learnings out of, for instance, the Iberian blackout last spring.
Yep.
I think we learned from the events we've studied around data centers. We've certainly learned a ton from the events we've studied around inverters. But, you know, we were set up to make sure that people trim trees and maintain facility ratings and all that good spinach stuff, which we still need to do. But now we have all this other stuff that we need to be able to do as well.
Mm-hmm. So what will a successful 2026 look like from your perspective for NERC?
A successful 2026 for us, I would say two major goals. One, that we've got clarity on where we're going to go with the standards process. Mm-hmm. And it would be awesome if we could get an order from FERC that we can start actually implementing as opposed to making filings on that.
Right.
And that we've got great clarity around how we're going to get all the data center work done.
Okay.
From a registration, possible standards, guidelines.
Yeah. Everything we talked about
all
today.
The stuff we talked about today, that's stuff that's in play as opposed to being talked about.
Right. Okay, final question. You know, it's always the same final question, is for the book recommendation, what are we going to add to our reading list?
Well, I would love to say a soldier story, but your audience told me that I can't already do that.
You've already recommended it twice.
So I will give you the other book that I'm dusting off.
Shoot.
That, again, was written probably 25 years ago by a sports psychologist, a guy named Bob Rotella, and it's called Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. Yes. And it's a sports psychology book, but if you read it and you think about it, not in the context of playing golf, but in the context of everything you do in your life, there is so much wisdom in that book about leadership, you know, how to think like a professional, you know, like someone who's going to succeed at all times, which is the mind of a professional athlete, and how to deal with adversity, right, when you don't achieve what you think you'd achieve. It's an easy read. It's about that big. You can read it on a two-hour flight. But it's one of the most impactful books I've read on leadership in my life.
The most impactful book on leadership, and it's called?
Golf is Not a Game of Perfect.
Not a Game of Perfect.
And Bob Rotella, R-O-T-E-L-L-A. Strongly recommend it.
Fantastic. We will add it to our reading list. And Jim, really appreciate this. I know it was a pretty quick hit, but I really wanted to get in just a kind of a very short snapshot of sort of the state of reliability, because it's been such an important part of the conversations you and I have been having this past year. It's been a wild ride, but I really do appreciate you squeezing in the time before you jump on your Amtrak to Baltimore.
Right. Well, thank you very much, Francis. It's great to do it, and I'm glad we had a chance to connect here as well.
Fabulous.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the flux capacitor. You can find me on Instagram as the Brad Bradley, on LinkedIn, and through our website at electricity.ca. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 131. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides information on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Jim's recommendation, Bob Rotella's book, Golf is Not a Game of Perfect. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.